Imagine that you are completing basic training as part of an emergency response team. You and your teammates are learning about responding to nerve agent weapons. You consider how nerve agents work. How do these chemicals disrupt the mechanisms by which neurons use to communicate? What antidotes are given in case of a nerve agent attack? Welcome to an episode of Audio Bricks. I am Yoon Weisholtz, here to bring neurology from our bricks to your ears. Let's get started on learning about synaptic transmission. Exploring how brain cells communicate is a core concept in basic neuroscience and will help you better understand multiple neurological diseases where synaptic transmission is abnormal. After listening to this episode, you will be able to 1. Define synaptic transmission. 2. Describe both chemical and electrical neurotransmission and how these two types differ. 3. Describe the most common neurotransmitters, their function, and roles in disease. Part 1. What is synaptic transmission? Synaptic transmission is the official term for how neurons talk with each other. Now, neurons communicate a little differently compared to other cells in the body. Brain cells do not touch each other, but they do communicate across a junction between them, called the synapse. The neuron that sends the signal is the presynaptic neuron, and the neuron that receives the signal is called the postsynaptic cell. The space in between is called the synaptic cleft. Most of the time, the signal from the presynaptic neuron's axon is transmitted to the cell dendrite of the postsynaptic neuron, but it can also be transmitted to the cell body or another axon. So just to check if you are paying attention, what is the purpose of a synapse? The purpose of a synapse is to allow communication between the axon terminal of a presynaptic neuron and the cell body, dendrite, or axon terminal of a postsynaptic neuron. Part 2. What is an action potential? Synapses are specialized structures where nerve impulses are transmitted from one neuron to another. And what exactly is this signal? It's the action potential, or an electrical impulse that travels down the axon toward the presynaptic terminal at the end of the neuron. On reaching the terminal, the impulse is transmitted to the next neuron across the synapse. Because neurons don't actually touch each other at the synaptic cleft, they must communicate across that space in one of two ways. 1. Chemical transmission, or 2. Electrical transmission. Although these two synaptic processes are distinct, it turns out that synaptic transmission can be chemical, electrical, or even both at the same synapse. This concept of how neurons communicate is super important, so let's do a quick check on that. What are the two types of synaptic communication methods? That's correct! It's chemical and electrical. Now, let's dig deeper into each of these types of neurotransmissions. Part 3. Chemical transmission. First, the most common method of neurotransmission is chemical transmission. There are several sequential steps from action potential to neurotransmitter release, so let me take you through the process step by step. Before things get started, the neurotransmitters are synthesized in the cell body of the presynaptic neuron or within the axon terminal. They are then stored in synaptic vesicles. These are intracellular structures like little balloons encased in a lipid bilayer. The vesicles are transported to the axon terminal membrane and are anchored to the neuron's cytoskeleton by proteins with snappy names like SNAP25, syntaxin, synaptobrevin, and the snare complex. Now that we have neurotransmitters loaded into vesicles, here is how they get released. First, an action potential comes down the axon and causes the presynaptic membrane to depolarize. Second, depolarization causes presynaptic voltage-gated calcium channels to open, and calcium channels flow into the presynaptic terminal. Next, the calcium concentration rapidly increases inside the neuron, leading to fusion of synaptic vesicles with the cell membrane and release of their neurotransmitter content into the synaptic cleft. From there, the neurotransmitters cross the synaptic cleft and bind to the postsynaptic receptors. And lastly, receptor binding opens ion channels there, leading to ion influx across the cell membrane and generation of a postsynaptic potential in the postsynaptic neuron. Although this process is slower than electrical synapses, chemical transmission has one huge advantage. Released neurotransmitters can bind multiple receptors on the postsynaptic cell, allowing gain, or multiplication, of a single impulse. Now let's test your knowledge of one of the most important steps in vesicle fusion. When an action potential arrives at the presynaptic terminal, which voltage-gated channels are activated? That's right, voltage-gated calcium channels are activated, leading to an influx of calcium ions. Moving on, what happens once the neurotransmitters bind to the postsynaptic receptors? Activation of postsynaptic ion channels and receptors can trigger excitatory or inhibitory responses. First, excitatory postsynaptic potentials, or EPSPs, make the neuron's membrane potential more positive and therefore promote the generation of action potentials within the postsynaptic neuron. Second, inhibitory postsynaptic potentials, or IPSPs, in contrast, make the postsynaptic neuron membrane potential more negative, thereby preventing depolarization and the generation of an action potential. Once a receptor produces the postsynaptic potential, there can be summation of multiple potentials from different locations. None on their own might be enough to create an action potential that transmits down the axon, but added together, they could. Quick test on what we've just learned. How do neurons communicate through chemical synapses? Here's the answer. Communication through chemical synapses involves release and binding of neurotransmitters. Now, what happens to neurotransmitters after they get released? Well, there needs to be tight control of how much neurotransmitter is in the synaptic cleft, because an excess would lead to undesirable excessive stimulation or inhibition. Excess neurotransmitters in the synaptic cleft can diffuse away to be taken up by other cells, digested by enzymes in the synaptic cleft, or taken up by the presynaptic vesicle. After releasing its neurotransmitter contents, the empty vesicles will migrate back up through the axon's cytoplasm for recycling. Imagine the vesicle to be like a bus, and neurotransmitters the people. Once the bus reaches its destination, the membrane, it will unload all the passengers. It then begins its return route by heading back to the original pickup zone, the cytoplasm, and reloads neurotransmitters along the way. These transporters allow for reuptake of unused neurotransmitters, thereby recycling them for future use. Part 4. What are the synaptic neurotransmitters? Before we go on, let's recap what we've covered so far. We defined synaptic transmission and its importance to how neurons communicate. Now, let's focus on what neurotransmitters there are at chemical synapses. Okay, so there are many different types of neurotransmitters, and neurons release specific neurotransmitters to serve specific body functions. Think of this as a neuron being able to speak different languages. Neurons from different regions of the brain, or body, use different neurotransmitters, or languages, to communicate. In fact, it's now known that a given neuron can release multiple different neurotransmitters to achieve a complex effect, a process called co-transmission. That's like a neuron being bilingual. Most neurotransmitters are excitatory, stimulating muscle contraction or other actions. These include acetylcholine, dopamine, glutamate, norepinephrine, and serotonin. In contrast, gamma-aminobutyric acid, or GABA, is the primary inhibitory neurotransmitter. We'll discuss each of them below. Now let's start by talking about acetylcholine. This is the neurotransmitter that induces skeletal muscle contraction, and it also plays a role in some endocrine functions. Neurons that synthesize and release acetylcholine as their neurotransmitter are called cholinergic. Once acetylcholine gets released into the synaptic cleft, it gets degraded by the enzyme acetylcholinesterase. This provides time for the muscle to repolarize so that it is not stuck in a state of constant contraction. Why is acetylcholine important clinically? Well, presynaptic vesicles containing acetylcholine are held in place by presynaptic proteins like snare proteins. Infection with organisms that release the botulism and tetanus toxins both cleave the snare proteins. As a result, the vesicles cannot dock at the presynaptic membrane to release acetylcholine, which cannot stimulate muscle contraction. This inhibited release leads to paralysis and requires emergent treatment. Drugs that inhibit acetylcholinesterase were used as nerve gas in World War I and are now used in much more moderate doses to treat myasthenia gravis, a disease that leads to destruction of acetylcholine postsynaptic receptors and profound muscle weakness. Now let's turn our attention to the major excitatory neurotransmitter in the central nervous system, good old glutamate. While acetylcholine is the excitatory neurotransmitter used to stimulate muscle, the central nervous system uses glutamate for excitation. Glutamate is an excitatory neurotransmitter synthesized in the glutamine-glutamate cycle within the presynaptic neurons or glial cells. Glutamate exerts its effects on several types of postsynaptic receptors and also serves as a precursor for GABA. Excess glutamate can result in excitotoxicity, a process in which nerve cells are damaged by excessive calcium entry and overstimulation. Glutamate has been shown to initiate and propagate seizures, and abnormal levels play a role in many neurological disorders. There are three more major excitatory neurotransmitters we'll cover today: dopamine, norepinephrine, and serotonin. First, dopamine. Now, dopamine plays a major role in regulating the brain's reward and pleasure center, among others. This neurotransmitter is strongly connected with drug addiction and addictive personalities. When we use certain addictive drugs, dopamine release is enhanced, which is interpreted as a reward. This is a major mechanism for addiction. Which pathways are dopaminergic in the brain? The dopaminergic pathways of the brain include the mesocortical, mesolimbic, and nigrostriatal pathways. Each of them has a clinically relevant role to play. Decreased dopamine activity in the mesocortical pathway results in social withdrawal, isolation, flattened affect, poor speech, and lack of interest. Increased activity in the mesolimbic tract can lead to hallucinations, delusions, rapid speech, and catatonic behavior, such as those seen in schizophrenia. Dopamine inhibition has long been used for schizophrenia management. Dopamine released in the nigrostriatal pathway binds to dopamine D1 and D2 receptors in the striatum to allow for normal movements. Dopamine deficiency in this pathway is classically associated with Parkinson's disease. These patients have stiff movements, resting tremors, and progressive dementia. In Parkinson's disease, the loss of dopaminergic neurons in the substantia nigra leads to the progressive inability to make movements. Wow, we just went through a lot of brain pathways. Let's do a quick review question. What neurotransmitter modulates pleasure and reward? Dopamine is the neurotransmitter that modulates pleasure and reward. Next up is the neurotransmitter norepinephrine, which is part of the catecholamine family of neurotransmitters. It is famous for initiating the fight or flight response. In the brain, norepinephrine is made and released in presynaptic neurons, just like the other neurotransmitters. Unlike most neurotransmitters, it is not only released into synapses, but it is also a hormone circulating in the bloodstream. Norepinephrine can be made in postganglionic neurons of the sympathetic nervous system and in the adrenal medulla. Released or circulating norepinephrine binds to noradrenergic receptors located on the postsynaptic membrane. What effects does norepinephrine have? Norepinephrine acts in the brain to enhance focus and attention, stimulate arousal, promote alertness, and increase recall and memory retention. Systemically, norepinephrine increases heart rate through beta-1 receptors in the heart, and it increases blood pressure through alpha-1 receptors in the blood vessels. Finally, let's explore serotonin. Serotonin is an excitatory neurotransmitter involved in the regulation of mood, appetite, and sleep. In the central nervous system, serotonin is synthesized and released from the raphe nuclei, a group of nuclei near the midline of the brainstem. It targets 5-hydroxytryptamine, or 5-HT, receptors to produce its various mood-altering effects. Decreased levels of serotonin are often seen in patients with depression. This disorder manifests as sullen moods, sleep disturbance, feelings of worthlessness, appetite and weight changes, cognitive dysfunction, and loss of interest. Decreased levels of serotonin is also found in anxiety disorders. Therefore, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or SSRIs, are a first-line treatment and increase serotonin levels. These drugs act in the synaptic cleft and prevent neurotransmitter reuptake, leaving more serotonin to bind to the postsynaptic receptors. We've talked about excitatory neurotransmitters in depth, but what about inhibition? Gamma-aminobutyric acid, or GABA, is the main inhibitory neurotransmitter in our central nervous system. A GABA deficiency means decreased inhibition. Behaviorally, a decrease in GABA may cause disinhibited abnormal muscle movements, such as that seen in Huntington's disease, an autosomal dominant inherited disorder that manifests commonly from ages 20 to 50 years. These patients will display aggression, dementia, and choreiform movements, which are involuntary jerky movements of the extremities. Let's stop here to do a quick review. What is the main excitatory and inhibitory neurotransmitters of the central nervous system? And the answer is, glutamate is the main excitatory neurotransmitter in the central nervous system, while GABA is the main inhibitory neurotransmitter. Part 5, electrical transmission. All of the neurotransmitters we've just covered are part of the chemical neurotransmission method of synaptic communication. Let's focus now on electrical transmission. This is more direct, involving the direct flow of ions across the synapse without using neurotransmitters. As a result of the incoming electrical impulse down the axon, ions move from one neuron to the next one by tiny molecular bridges called gap junctions. These are small protein tunnels that contain numerous channels, each wide enough to let ions like sodium and potassium pass through. This process is more rapid than chemical transmission because chemical intermediaries are not involved. When an impulse arrives at the presynaptic terminal, it changes the membrane potential of the terminal, causing ions to flow across a gap junction to the next neuron. Normally, the gap junctions will allow ion flow in either direction. This might not be so helpful when we want a nervous impulse to travel only one way. Therefore, some gap junctions contain gated channels to allow only one-way traffic. Electrical synapses can conduct nerve impulses faster than chemical synapses, and they are often found in neural systems that require rapid responses, such as defensive reflexes, the cerebral cortex, the optic retina, the lateral vestibular nucleus, which coordinates head movement and balance, and the olfactory bulb for smell. Pop quiz time! How do neurons communicate through electrical synapses? In electrical synapses, neurons communicate directly via ion movement through gap junctions. Okay, friends, that's all I've got today for synaptic transmission. Let's see if we've completed the goals for this show. First, can you define synaptic transmission? Synaptic transmission is the process by which neurons communicate in both the central and peripheral nervous systems. Second, can you name the two main types of synaptic transmission? The two types are chemical and electrical neurotransmission, where chemical transmission is the main form of neurotransmission. At chemical synapses, an action potential depolarizes the presynaptic neuron, causing calcium influx and subsequent neurotransmitter release into the synaptic cleft and binding to postsynaptic receptors. Electrical transmission is much less common than chemical transmission, but is more rapid and involves direct neurotransmission between two neurons via ion movements across gap junctions. Thus, a chemical synapse contains a gap between two neurons where information passes in the form of neurotransmitters. An electrical synapse contains channel proteins between the two neurons so that an electrical signal can travel straight from one cell to the next. As a result, electrical synapses are much faster, but chemical synapses allow for signal gain. And finally, can you name the most common neurotransmitters? There are numerous types of neurotransmitters. In the peripheral nervous system, acetylcholine acts as an excitatory neurotransmitter that causes muscle contraction. Botulism and tetanus toxins cleave presynaptic proteins that hold neurotransmitter-filled vesicles, preventing acetylcholine release. This is what leads to muscle paralysis. In the central nervous system, excitatory signals are elicited by glutamate and inhibitory signals by GABA. Excess glutamate can induce excitotoxicity and play a role in seizure propagation. GABA deficiency contributes to disinhibition and abnormal movements such as those seen in Huntington disease. Other neurotransmitters include dopamine, norepinephrine, and serotonin. Dopamine is the main neurotransmitter in reward and pleasure pathways. It's been shown to play a major role in addiction disorders. Loss of dopaminergic neurons in the substantia nigra is implicated in Parkinson's disease. Norepinephrine functions to increase focus and attention, stimulate arousal, and help memory retention. Finally, decreased serotonin in the central nervous system is linked with depression and anxiety. This is why selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or SSRIs, are a first-line treatment for patients with these disorders. With our new understanding of neurotransmission, let's get back to that case from the very beginning. You are completing basic training as part of an emergency response team. You and your teammates are learning about responding to nerve agent weapons. How do nerve agents work? What mechanisms are these chemicals disrupting? Nerve agents, or nerve gases, are chemicals that disrupt synaptic transmission, specifically by blocking the enzyme acetylcholinesterase. This is the enzyme that catalyzes the breakdown of acetylcholine, the main excitatory neurotransmitter for muscle contraction. When acetylcholinesterase is blocked, the neurotransmitter acetylcholine hangs around longer in the synaptic cleft, causing prolonged muscle contraction. The standard treatment for nerve agent poisoning is to give an anticholinergic drug, such as atropine. And that's our show today. Make sure to like and subscribe. Your feedback continuously helps us to improve. You can get the full RxBricks experience online at www.usmle-rx.com. Complete with illustrations, study questions, flashcards, and active learning. That's all for this show today, and I can't wait to see you next time.